You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I hope that you've had a great week. It's been a great week of reality TV season premieres, Survivor, The Amazing Race, Kardashians on Hulu, Shark Tank. So you have plenty to watch this week in terms of reality TV premieres. One reality show you have to watch this week is The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, because we've been hearing about an epic meltdown in Aspen, Colorado for months and months and months, and we're finally seeing somewhat of what happened. So, as mentioned, they were all in Aspen on this trip. Kyle hosted several women in her own home, including her sister. Diana invites Dorit and Erica to join her in a luxury hotel because Diana's the kind of rich woman who cannot stay in other people's homes. She needs an advanced team to show up at the hotel, make sure it's the right thread count, candles, the room's facing the sun in the right way, you know, all the normal stuff. Here's what I think happened with Kathy. I'm thinking it's a combination of things. You know, maybe it's because she endured weeks of watching somebody else plan her daughter's wedding. Maybe it was the pressure that comes from becoming a latter-day reality star. Maybe it's the negotiations that just overwhelmed her. But nonetheless, what we understand is that she suffered some sort of quasi-breakdown. And much like so many great reality TV moments, it happened while nobody was filming. The cameras had already packed up for our loss because we are left to put together context clues, make assumptions based on what may or may not have happened because there is no proof. So what we do know is that whatever was said, and which Lisa Rinna says includes bad things about other cast members, Kyle and her family, and NBC Universal Bravo, we're never really going to know. Sutton said that her meltdown began with Kathy becoming so irate after her efforts to create a conga line at Aspen's members-only Caribou Club were ignored. So next, Kyle claimed that Kathy demanded that her sister Kyle depart the club with her. And she grew angrier and she prompted Lisa to take her back to Kyle's cabin. And that's when Lisa says that she got a firsthand witness to Kathy's dark side. She said she took off her glasses, she throws them on the ground, she's jumping up and down, breaking her glasses, she's pounding the walls, and she's screaming that she made Kyle, and she's responsible for Kyle, and she said, I will destroy Kyle and her family if it's the last thing I ever do. So once they come back to LA, she's acting like business as usual, that nothing happened of the sort, and I'm assuming she's thinking, if there's no footage, no one can say anything, so I'm just going to continue business as usual. It's probably not the first time this has happened, by the way. So she goes to Crystal's birthday party. Everyone's sort of looking at each other like, don't you remember when she had that complete meltdown? And Lisa Rinna is not willing to withstand sitting at a party and pretending that she was not witness to some serious batshit crazy behavior. She said, "It's hard to get past what I've been through with Kathy, and I'm very, very much in shock still, and I'm putting on a brave face because I feel PTSD." So, I mean, again, you got to put together context clues because there's an alluding that this is, the things that she said are horrible, but we're never really going to know. But I have to say, this is what's really intrigued me to this show since its beginning. It's really a relationship between Kathy, Kyle, and Kim, which makes this show so good and so complex and fractured. And really, you could honestly study it in a college course because their family of origin included a domineering mother. She wanted them to marry wealthy. And Kathy did, and she did so young. And so she enjoyed a life of great privilege. Their sister Kim was a TV and movie star at a very young age, and it seems she has spent decades trying to unravel what her place was in their family and also in the world, because at one point, she's supporting her family financially, and she's beloved by a public until the roles no longer come. And then you have Kyle, who is the other sister, the one in the background, the one who was a single mother until she met Mauricio. And then he builds this real estate career, and I'd hoped that he would make partner at Kathy's husband's real estate firm, but they wouldn't do so. So he started his own real estate firm, The Agency, which you see him discussing in the very first season of this show. Now, The Agency is a global business. He has an upcoming show on Netflix about it, and Kyle has enjoyed television and business success. So this has all the hallmarks for a sophisticated HBO drama. You've got three sisters raised in Beverly Hills who each took their own path to love and success. And some are not as thrilled with the other successes, and they still hold resentments. And then you've got the next generation of cousins having very close relationships, and they're trying to navigate the decades and decades of life experiences, bitterness, resentments that their mothers have gone through. So I just find it endlessly fascinating. And I also think, is it possible that Kathy suddenly started drinking tequila to keep up with the new business that she invested in, and she's either allergic to it or it just makes her have an alter ego? Like, I'm just telling you, if I have Goldschlager, I'm a different person. Like, I should have no access to Goldschlager, and nor would I, because I remember I did a shot of it in college and I believe it came out my eyeballs. So I don't know. Maybe tequila is not a good drink for Kathy. So I need you to watch the episode. And I need you to go get the book, House of Hilton by Jerry Oppenheimer, because it is a fantastic foundation for trying to understand what's unfolding on screen, because it's not about what you think it is. It's always something that has happened years ago, off camera, behind closed doors. It's never what you really think it's about. So make sure you watch that. Today's episode is fantastic because it includes an interview with Chad and Lizzie from Game of Roses podcast, which I love that podcast, because it's all about the gamesmanship behind The Bachelor. Listen, it's easy to watch that show and kind of in some way kind of imagine, what if these two people had never been given the chance to meet someone like the person they just met on the TV show? And sure, they do seem to be hungry for attention, but if it were not for this television show, they would have never met and married and started a family. I mean, that rarely happens. So what I love about their show is they have all these hysterical acronyms that they have. They have a complete system to review this show. And Chad is now consulting players on how to win the game of The Bachelor. And I just think it's endlessly fascinating and hysterical. So they're on today to talk about this week's finale. We had two bachelorettes. It was a disaster of a season. We go into the reasons why. All you need to know is it was a two-part finale that was 5 hours long. I want you to think about the things I could have done in 5 hours. Yeah, I don't know. It just makes you long for the old days, like the Andrew Firestone season or the Alex Michelle season or the Trista season. So many great seasons early on where you were just riveted and you had no clue how the show ended and you were looking at pictures to just try to figure out who the person's finger is in the picture. Could you identify the knuckles? Who was the finalist? Who did that person end up proposing to? Are they going to get married, etc.? This show has become such a game, and the way that they honor it and review it is just so great. So that is a fantastic segment. I want to remind you that you've got to check out my bonus episodes if you go to my Patreon, patreon.com/KKC, patreon.com/KKC, and also two upcoming live shows, November 20th at the City Winery in New York City and December 3rd at the Hollywood Improv in Los Angeles. Make sure you get those tickets. So here we go with Game of Roses. Listen, I don't know where you are in your comfortable clothes journey, but I am going to change your life. You need to be wearing Vuori. You're going to do a lot of things this fall: hiking, running, lounging, and watching my must-watch list. And you need to feel nothing but joy and comfort. The minute I was gifted with a black pair of Vuori performance joggers, my life, it was forever changed. Never had I enjoyed such comfort while working out or on the go. Listen, I love Vuori so much, I'm now converting all of my friends and family too. My husband cannot imagine sleeping again without a Vuori men's ponto short. My sister is now fully embracing the daily legging and the energy top. Her boxing trainer now wears Vuori shorts. Her hairdresser, Vanessa, is now wearing Vuori performance joggers. We all love Vuori, and let me tell you something, you will too. So go now to Vuori.com/Kate. That's Vuori.com/Kate to get 20% off your first order. That's Vuori.com/Kate to get 20% off your first order. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Chad and Lizzie are the co-hosts of Game of Roses, a podcast with an in-depth coverage of the fastest growing professional sport in the world, The Bachelor. They are the foremost experts in gameplay analysis, examining every episode as it airs, as well as the history of the game and the plays that happen off the field in the parasocial arena of social media. It is the Moneyball of The Bachelor. They are co-authors of one of my most favorite books, especially when you're looking for a Christmas gift. Just a heads up. It is called How to Win The Bachelor, The Secret to Finding Love and Fame on America's Favorite Reality Show. They are amongst my favorite podcasters in the podcast world. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for that glowing introduction.
I loved that intro.
You've already shared with me that you had trouble sleeping last night.
I did.
We both did.
Is that unusual for you two to have trouble sleeping after?
No, I mean, I usually have trouble sleeping, but I usually know the reasons why. It's usually existential dread. This was specifically because this episode last night did a number on me. The final finale or whatever. I just couldn't stop thinking about it all night long.
Yeah.
From everything from the poor construction of this entire season, culminating in the most poorly constructed finale ever with moments where they're giving away the ending by showing Gabby Wendy's engagement ring two scenes before we even see the engagement itself, to completely ignoring the blackface photo, just pretending that never happened, but making Eric Schwer answer for his infidelities and those DMs, but then having everyone there to forgive him, and Dark Lord Palmer gets on camera Gabby Windy to officially forgive him. So everything is on the up and up. It was just kind of the most grotesque example to me of how the show really manipulates the narrative to fit whatever they think it should be. Mm-hmm. Truth be damned. What the audience wants be damned. And then at the very end to have Jesse Palmer come on and say, Bachelor Nation, we're sorry. And we've heard you and we're moving forward. It's like, you didn't hear shit. I just watched the show you produced. You heard nothing.
Yeah.
And if you did hear it, you actively fucking ignored it.
We hear you is such corporate speak for these companies that are basically getting in trouble for various things. And the producers promised to do better on race relations. We've had, they devoted most of the After the Final Rose during Matt James's season to Rachel Kirkconnell's racism scandal. Why did they not even include a single question for Eric Schwer? That is the part that caused me to lose sleep. Is it just, it haunts you when you see that happen, and you know it's an active choice, you know it's a 3-hour program, so they have the time. They have the time for ads. They have the time to ask Zach Shallcross the same question 100 times.
I mean, 100 times. They asked him, how many times did they ask him, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
How are you
What's
feeling?
What's it like?
How are you feeling?
I don't have any words.
Yeah.
What's it like being the Bachelor?
The concept, like, I think it's very important to understand that them not asking Eric Schwer about the blackface photo is something that multiple hour-long meetings were held about at the highest levels of ABC, Warner Brothers, and ZK Productions. This was a very clear and active decision made by the people who make this show to ignore this completely.
A lot of these contestants talk more and more about the reality of what's happening in their DMs afterwards and the pressures that come with it. I noticed last night several former leads being very critical of the way that it was produced. Is that interesting for them to do so publicly?
Yes. When you have the players that have made the game what it is, ultimately, turning on the game itself or on the people who produce it, the people who are presenting it, saying this is not how it should be produced, this is not how it should be presented. And I think this also speaks to the moment with Tino where, you know, whatever he did in terms of the infidelity in the relationship, did he deserve to be put in a situation where he breaks down into tears and says, let me out of here?
Right.
Where he's asking to be freed essentially from what we perceive to be at the very least a psychological prison, if not an actual physical one, where they're not allowing him to physically leave the space. Does he deserve that? I don't know.
As well as the public humiliation of having the Avon steal during Tino's hot seat. So he just has to sit there and take it. We've seen that move before, but never forcing that person to be part of that conversation.
There's something that has gone with villains in the contemporary Bachelor world. If you look back in like historically prior seasons, let's just take Sean Lowe's season, for example, because he was there, the golden boy, maybe the greatest season of the show that's ever existed. He had a villain on his season named Tierra Lacazzi. We all remember her eyebrow. Nobody can take her sparkle. She performed a lot of IFIs over the course of that season, injury, fear, illness plays to get more attention one-on-one time. She seemed to revel in the villainy. Corinne Olympios reveled in the villainy. There was something that was fun about those villains. They enjoyed being villains. And I think it might have something to do with social media not quite being as caustic as it is now.
Right.
But also the show liked having villains. The show didn't punish them for these things. They let it kind of play out amongst the players. When Corinne Olympios opts to not show up for a rose ceremony, instead takes a nap, the producers don't come after her and like make her answer for that in a mean way on a Women Tell All or After the Final Rose. The players kind of come at her and she can deal with that however she wants to deal with it. But they treat it as like funny and cute. Now, if you do anything, if you come into the show and even have a thought about being the Bachelor or Bachelorette, the show is going to fucking edit you to make you look like you committed a murder.
Right.
It's completely different now in the way they treat villains as well, I think.
So let's talk briefly about the two last contesticles. So we've got Tino and Eric. As far as pre-finale, how do you think, what do you think of their gameplay this season?
I think Eric's has been pretty flawless. I mean, he just kind of had this vibe of a very good match for Gabby the whole season. He didn't really make a lot of missteps. There was that one one-on-one date where they cut out a lot of the conversation where I believe that he was sharing his PTC, his personal tragedy card, about his father who was ill. And I think that he handled that hometown date really well. Tino, I think, has played to the best of his ability. His parents might have tried to thwart that for him on the show and via social media. But Tino was a very strong player, and we saw from his social media post that he had studied Tyler Cameron's play, and I feel like he was trying to do sort of a Tyler Cameron-esque run through the show.
Yeah, I feel similarly. I mean, the thing that kind of sucked about this season, one of the many things that was terrible about it, started in concept, the double leads, which necessarily meant that you're going to get half the screen time for all the players and the leads, which means we're not going to get to see all of the amount of play that we usually would. We're not going to get to see the subtlety in a turn of a phrase or having a conversation about something that isn't exactly germane to the development of the relationship. So I think in that way, this was a much harder season to, I mean, you can look at the stats and analyze those certainly, like what roses they got and how many one-on-ones they got and all that kind of stuff. But to really have a good critique of their play style, I think is almost impossible because the presentation of it was so disjointed and you barely got to really see any of these people. I mean, by the end of it, I still was mixing up Eric Schwer and Zach Shawcross, mixing up their names because I was like, I don't know, they look kind of similar and they have names with CH at the end of them. They just did a disservice to everyone involved this season, I think, through the premise alone.
The lack of screen time and story development for all of the players was also shown in the stats of their Instagram followers. Last week, Eric Schwer was the only one who had gotten 100K. And that's very unusual to only have one person be in the 100K club at the finals, especially when they're the only person left in the game.
Now, do they privately seethe in anger because their goal has not been achieved if they have not made it past that 100K threshold?
Yes.
Yeah.
The only reason to go on The Bachelor or indeed any reality television program is to build your audience to then launch yourself into an influencer career or have a podcast or whatever you want to do next. But especially The Bachelor, because they don't pay you. You go into that show as a player at your own expense. You have to take however long off work. You have to buy all your own clothes, et cetera, et cetera. And then if they don't want to have you back for Paradise or a subsequent run in another season or as a Bachelor or Bachelorette, you're just out that money and time. And so the only way to really make it up is to build a big enough following that you can then do some SponCon after it. And I don't know who's going to be able to do that from this season.
Was there any pro to having two leads?
I would say a pro is that the show has been feeling a little stagnant. And the pro is that they are trying things and they're throwing things against the wall. We had our first true experimental era was seasons 4 through 12, where they had multiple leads. They had taking place in different cities. They were adding in different types of limo exits and different types of group date roses and all these various things that they were experimenting with the format. And it hasn't really changed since season 13 in any fundamental way. So this was a drastic change. And I think they did need a shakeup. I'm not sure this is the shakeup that we were hoping for.
No, totally. I agree with what you're saying, Lizzie. There's been no real experimentation since season 12. But the thing that worked, that they found through those first 4 through 12 experimental seasons, they figured out the format. You need the group date rose. They brought in the first impression rose for the first time, an example, in season 5. The first one-on-one date roses, group date roses, and the kind of structure of going all the way through the season with a single lead so that you're building up narratives and then you care about the final 4 players and the final 3 players and the final 2 players. What they've done here is kept all of the accoutrements, the various mm-hmm. roses, then they doubled those up and split the screen time and the narrative time of all these different players. So you don't end up caring about any of them. Same with the leads. I don't feel like I got to really know Gabby or Rachel Recchia any better through this process. And they were bachelorettes. It just seemed like the concept itself, it seemed like the current producer class had no foresight that this would be a bad idea, that it would ultimately be a net disaster in terms of what the actual format of the game is, which is one person trying to find, or at least as they present it, trying to find the love of their life, their soulmate. Right. And we get to watch this game of attrition. If there's two games of attrition going on and some players can jump back and forth between different teams, and it just made no sense. And then by the end of it, you see how it just devolved into disaster with there is no final rose ceremony. We know who we had to develop a new stat, LMS, last man standing. That is now a new thing. It's like, these are players who don't necessarily have a ring or a final rose yet, but they're the only person left. And that happened with both of them. An utter dissolution of the entire structure of the game.
I couldn't understand throughout the season, are these contesticles that do not have any romantic interest in either of these two leads, or they're so frustrated by the system that they are not willing to even put in minimal effort to make this thing work?
Are you talking about like Johnny when he was on the beach and he was like, look, I'm vibing with you. I got to get out of here, bro.
Yeah. It felt like a lot of that energy. It was just sort of like not an A for effort. Like, yeah. We're not fully putting our full effort into getting to know you, or at least pretending to be interested in you and wanting a future. They just seem like someone who just stopped by the pool but has to leave at 5 for a conference call.
I mean, part of the problem with that is that they're denigrating their leads now. When they had the two leads, they're pitting them against each other. Neither of them has as much power as a single lead would have. They're sort of giving Rachel Recchia this villain edit, which they seem to be doing with their leads multiple seasons now. They did it with Clayton Eckard. And in that way, you are lowering the competition level because your bachelor or your bachelorette should be on this pedestal. This should be the person that everyone in America wants to date, the most eligible bachelor or bachelorette, not God just some guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. The finale, first of all, it was 5 hours. If we're going to put parts one and two together, 5 hours is exhausting. And I felt like I spent a good part of it scrolling through other things. What would have been the appropriate hour number to keep this audience invested?
I think a single 3-hour finale would have been fine. Mm-hmm. And then you get enough time for your ads. You get enough time to, in quotes, tell both of these stories. You know, it just doesn't matter, though. At least this is how I felt. And Lizzie and I have watched like everything. And we remember the good eras where it was really you're so invested. And they do put the leads on a pedestal. They protect the leads. Mm-hmm. Now there's this feeling that like, not only are they not protecting their leads anymore or any of the players, the producers have open contempt for everyone in the show. They are actively trying to destroy everyone. And it's like, well, nobody's coming into the show for that. And if they are, it's only to get Instagram followers because they know they're going to have to go through some kind of fucking crazy gauntlet that could wind up with them getting death threats and all this bullshit. Like the only thing that makes that worth it is a paycheck at the end. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think like 3 hours probably would have satisfied it. Maybe two. It just, again, like once it came down to the end, I don't give a shit if Eric Schwer proposes. I don't give a shit at this point who the next bachelor is. Like Zach Shallcross, I guess. I'm interested to see who the players are for that season. And I did like to see the first five come out and do their little exits. I always enjoy that, especially because it's live TV and it's always awkward and it never works. They've done it multiple times. It's never good.
Oh, it's terrible.
I think it's hilarious. I like it. I enjoy it.
My other thing that I did like was something that we haven't seen at finales recently, which is a Council of Crowns where you bring back former leads. And seeing Sean Lowe in the audience... Mm-hmm. with Catherine Giudice, I feel like that really elevated the pomp and circumstance of the night.
I felt like that was a move to sweep this season under the rug and quickly push out the lead, gave him at least 20 minutes, give him the senator's platform. He just seems like a complete politician to me. And to waste the time of the make-believe limo, you know, reenactments because they just wanted to get rid of this disaster of a season.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
I have to ask you about this indiscretion with Tino. Does anybody actually even know what happened? And does it matter?
No.
Yeah.
We never heard about this until it showed up in the show, which is fucking rare. Usually, if there's some scandal and shit happening around a player, I get a million DMs about it. I did not receive one about whatever this cheating was. And we didn't get very good details in the document either. It's like it was some girl that he was talking to before and they kissed at a bar and he had his notebook full of receipts. Like, it was all very vague. And that also speaks to how poor the current producer tier is. They can't even construct a good narrative out of something like that. A fucking breakup where the guy's coming in with receipts and a notebook and it's about cheating. That's a layup. If you can't put something entertaining together out of that scenario, you got to get fired now. And I would say like to the whole tier of producers now making this show, you got to get rid of them. Yeah. They're real bad because it's not just about the premise, which probably had something to do with ABC. I could see Rob Mills being involved and at least okaying that, you know, the dual lead. I'm not saying that that's entirely on the producers, but how the show was constructed, the showing Gabby's ring before the proposal. I mean, these are
so
simple
clumsy,
things.
Very clumsy.
You have to be better than that. Everyone involved. But also just, again, that idea of like they're tearing down the leads. They're tearing down the players. They seem to think, these producers, that the goal should be to have as many nervous breakdowns as possible because I think they're chasing that fence jump moment from season 23 that they built an entire promo cycle around and got everybody interested. But the thing that worked about that wasn't that he was having a nervous breakdown. It's the mystery of why he's jumping the fence. We need a mystery that you're building to. Something we need satisfied, an answer. I don't want to see people crying and breaking down and saying, get me out of here. There's no mystery in that. I know what happened. The producers forced them to have a nervous breakdown like they do every season.
The 100th Bachelorette cry squat. It just doesn't hit the same.
What about Avon coming out to see Rachel and Tino's left there? I mean, Tino and his family seem like probably horrible people, but I felt some empathy in that moment. I was like, let this guy go. I mean, she talked in circles and then they brought Avon out and then they brought them backstage and we never saw them ever again. I was so confused and I was elated that all of those former leads were talking about it because it was absurd.
I really think it was their way of trying to look like they weren't totally screwing over Rachel Recchia, but also disappearing her from stage. They're like, we're done. We don't want you to talk about Rachel Recchia anymore. Oh, she's gone off with Avon, so it's fine. Just focus on Gabby, who we probably should have made the single lead to begin with.
Oh, I think, and no disrespect to Rachel, she seems like a fun person who would be great at a dinner party. But it did seem many times throughout the season that she's waiting for a line from a producer. She's just, I don't think she was a good lead.
Well, they both, I think, were put in a position that was pretty unwinnable. When producers come out and they tell you, all right, Rachel and Gabby, now you have to go sit at this table and have this exact conversation. Rachel, you're going to say all your love levels where your final three guys are at, and then you're going to ask Gabby about hers, and she's going to tell you love levels. Like, there's no way to make that work. You know what
They're
I mean?
They're not actors.
Even if they were, it's a shitty script. Like, there's not much you can do with it, you know? I don't fault either of them. I think to the point of like what some of the Crowns said in that Council of Crowns, like they did the best they could. I forget who said that. It might've been Becca Kufrin and it might've been Kaylin Bristow, but somebody told them, you know, nobody could have done this as good as you. And I agree. I think the situation they were put in was so bad. There's nothing they could have done except what they did. I firmly, truly believe that. And it's like, in the end, it's up to the edit. It's up to what the producers want to do. Like when they're making Rachel Recchia pretend that she likes Meatball to have him come back into the season. It's like, we know this is fucking bullshit.
Right.
You're just going to have him do some tattle or something.
I don't know. I think Recchia and Meatball are endgame.
Oh.
They're going to wind up together. That's going to be the big twist.
I mean, this is why we were trying to start the hashtag paid Tyler Cameron, because we were like, this franchise needs to, needs a jolt in it to...
But Tyler Cameron is the kind of guy who's going to be 53 years old on a speedboat in Florida with a weathered tan and three kids from different women. And I just don't think that we would ever have any sort of romance story other than the romance that he has with a camera.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, great. Tyler Cameron sounds like a perfect bachelor. Exactly. Get him in there before he starts having these kids.
He doesn't need to get married. There's only one who's gotten married. Sean Lowe. One for 26.
Do you think that Zach was chosen in part because he is a famous relative?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think he is the perfect combination, or what this current producer class views as the perfect combination of innocuous, good-looking enough, and naive enough to the process that he's easily manipulated. That's what I really think they look for in leads now. And it used to be different. There was a time at the end of Elon Gale's tenure where what I felt like what they looked for was somebody who was actually smart, funny, good on camera, and will play the game, will play ball. You look back at like a Nick Viall.
Yes.
That guy was basically a producer. He constantly on his podcast talks about like, it is a TV show and part of the lead's job is to make a good TV show. I don't think Zach Shallcross is thinking about making a good TV show.
Yeah, he negotiated the bouncy house with Corinne, he said.
Yeah, and I think that was like when the show was its best, is when you had leads that were capable of rendering very good on-screen performances, but also understood that like there's a game to be played here and I got to work with the producers. But now the producers aren't working with anybody because they're actively trying to fucking kill you. They want to see somebody literally have a nervous breakdown and fall into a heap of sobbing tears every episode if they can.
Right.
And it's like, nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see that.
Who are we rooting for? Like, we're supposed to be on some kind of a journey. There's a character we're supposed to identify with this and want good things to happen for them. No one in the show is that anymore. We're just watching it to be like, who's going to get tortured first and how bad is the torture going to be?
Do you think that anyone off the season will have a long and lasting career in the entertainment industry?
I mean, Gabby's going on Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. She's, what are her numbers at right now? She was maybe the only player to hit 1 million. She's at 800 still. She's not even going to hit it.
She might hit it after Dancing with the Stars or something. I don't know. But I think
it's on Apple. It's on Disney Plus. I'm going to say no.
I think she's not going to. So she will be. The Bachelorettes used to always hit 1 million. And now.
Wow. That's a bummer.
Rachel Recchia has 500,000.
Wow.
I mean, that's the lowest number we've seen for a bachelorette in a modern history. It's probably like Andy Dorfman.
Since Instagram.
I think Gabby Windey maybe has a shot. I don't know what kind of representation she has, but I could actually see her becoming like a sitcom actress. I think she is genuinely, legitimately very funny. And I think that could be turned into some kind of an entertainment possibility.
Or a podcast.
I just don't. Yeah, podcast. I don't know what she's up for, but I think she could potentially do it. Yeah.
Now, I remember last time we spoke, you said that there were current players that were under your direction.
That's correct.
How far did they make it?
I am not at liberty to discuss. those players can come forward at any time. It's up to them. They can reveal anything that we've discussed, anything that we've coached, but I will never reveal anything about
them. Oh, good
personally.
For you. Okay. Yeah. But there's still hope that maybe they'll come forward at a later date and give a TED talk.
Yes. I think with a fair degree of certainty, I can say that like the players that I've coached will start to come out, make themselves known. They'll probably come on our podcast at some point and talk about it. But not for a little while longer. Some of them may still be involved with the game.
And those conversations that you have, how much of it are you laughing hysterically?
Zero.
It's just super serious.
Yeah, it's like coaching a pro athlete.
Wow. Okay. And what are some of the things that they can do to prepare themselves before they go into a season, physically and mentally?
Physically is... And I mean, a lot of this is in our book. These are just like generic strategies that apply to everybody. But when I coach people, I tailor strategies specifically to their persona, to who the bachelor might be, what situations I think are likely to pop up for them specifically based on whatever their attributes are. But generically speaking, to get ready, you A, want to go in knowing the producers are not your friends.
Right.
From the time they start casting, they will start trying to chum up with you and be your friend and try to build that trust. All that is a lie. And you have to understand that. You can't get like taken by their ability to manipulate because they are very good at it. Mm-hmm. Physically, I mean, always a good idea to go throw a football around, to go to a batting cage and hit some baseballs. Especially if you're not athletically inclined, you don't want the first time that you have to play football to be on a group day in fucking the middle of the season against somebody who's like a professional athlete. So you should definitely pick up a ball of some kind and play catch with it at least once or twice. And I would also say practice your hoo-joos, your hug jumps. Mm-hmm,
right.
Get somebody who's at least 6 feet tall, run and jump on them and cling to them as tightly as you can so that the first time you do a hoo-joo isn't
flowing. Yes.
I would say a lot of the practice should be in speaking directly to camera and making sure that you are charismatic on screen, because the aim of the game is screen time and you're going to be in such a situation of duress that no matter what the prep you do, sometimes it cannot be enough.
Do you ever ask them to send you videos of them just staring off into the distance while beside a tree?
A ponder shot you're talking about? Yeah.
Ponder shot.
I don't know how much I can divulge about my involvement with potentially editing submission videos or things of that nature. You know what I'm saying?
Roger that. Wow. Well, let's say someone's listening to this show and they think to themselves, I would like to be part of that coaching team. I see myself not as a player, but as a coach.
Oh, interesting.
Would they at any point be able to join your organization in the coaching of contestants? Because many of them have spent years watching the show and believe themselves to be experts in their own specific area.
Sure. I'd be open to something like that. Expand the process.
Right.
I mean, at this point, it's just me. And I do feel like I have a very good grasp on, especially after the first season that I coached, I now have a very good grasp on how the show is constructed. The edit, like how to manipulate that. Because ultimately, you get in there and you're playing the game. The game is its own structure existing objectively outside of the edit. But then what we see on screen, there is a secondary game that you're playing essentially against producers, but also against everybody else to force certain footage to either be usable or not, to force certain footage to be taken or not. And that is a much... I think a higher level game, a more subtle game. And that's one that I'm really starting to key in on now. Because the basic game strategy is like, I feel like I have that down cold. There's a real specific pattern you have to do through the season. And there's some variables about, you know, when you get your first one-on-one or a group date or what those dates might be. Those variables come into play, but it's basically a situational thing and learning how to leverage your own personal story, your own personal play, personal tragedy card, PTC, as we say, or IFIs or whatever. All of these kind of like, basic game structure that you have. But controlling the edit is like, that's a very high level thing. And that is kind of what I'm getting into now, teaching players about how, you know, what you can do basically to make sure the edit is what you want it to be. Because you never right. want to leave that in the producer's hands.
No.
It's essentially a game of manipulation against the producers. You have to make them think they're getting what they want, but in reality, they're getting what you want.
Have you ever had a former producer reach out to you and say, I'm on this team, like, sign me up, coach. I've got my bat, my balls, I got my cleats, let's do this.
I wish. I've never had any communications with producers.
Well, I feel like that's coming soon. Especially after they all get fired after this season.
The cease and desists are on their way.
Cease and desist for what? Watching the show? Pouring my life into something I love?
Chad, are you as much of a nerd as I am, and I believe that you are, that you knew that Christina Mandrell's mother was one of the Mandrell sisters? One of Zach Shawcross's, the contestants that came out?
No, I didn't realize that. I did look her up, though.
Oh, for she looks exactly like him. She's like the miniature version. She goes, I'm Christina Mandrell. I'm like, oh, the Mandrell sisters. Yep, absolutely.
Wow.
She's the daughter of Irene. We are such dorks that we know this. They were these country music stars that were television personalities in like the 80s. So they were on television and it was almost like pre-reality TV, where they were really known more for their personalities than their talent, but they were in the country music world. But they are really, really cute women. They were sisters, and now they have daughters, and one of them was the Christina Mandrell. And she is a single mother. Mm-hmm. So that adds a nice new element to it. I'm hoping that she reaches out to you, unless it's probably too late in the game.
it is definitely too late in the game.
Oh, wow.
They start shooting in a matter of days.
Well, we're very excited for Bachelor season because the level of play on the female contestants is always stronger. So,
some of them really good in their moments. Some of them already atrocious. I thought he was terrible too, but it seems like he was not prepared for the fact that he has to be quick on his feet. He's just terrible at it. So this will be interesting to watch.
What do you mean? He turned my socks off with the, this is going surreal. Okay.
And these girls, like, can you tell those contestants to stop asking, how are you feeling? How are you feeling? Like, stop. Level of excitement, 1 to 10 for Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah, I'm like at a 9 or a 10. I'm just, I'm really looking forward to seeing Shanae Ankeny again. I'm hopeful that she can do some kind of a redemption here. Or at least be the star of the show in some way. It does look like there's going to be a lot of good tears and whatnot. Looks like somebody gets rolled into a human burrito. I'm ready to see that.
And I love when they do that.
A threesome. I think that's the first I've ever heard of a threesome.
Yes.
Wow. Well, you never know. And then Lace is back.
Lace is back, yeah.
I'm most excited to see. I'm a huge Love Island fan, and it appears they're stealing some Love Island game elements like Casa Amor for Bachelor in Paradise. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited to see how they do that.
I think that's a necessary thing to do, to mix it up, because I think people get too complacent. It's like going to school in the middle of nowhere, and then you bring in a bunch of new girls that are seniors. You got to do it because people get too complacent. I adore you. I love what you do, what you stand for, and your show. Tell everybody where they can listen to your show and follow you.
You can follow us at Game of Roses Pod on our socials, and Game of Roses is available wherever you get your podcasts.
The Amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests, Chad and Lizzie from Game of Roses. Remember to join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. Remember to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star review. Join the Patreon page for bonus episodes at patreon.com/KateCasey. You can follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey, Instagram at Kate Casey CA, TikTok, It's Kate Casey, Cameo Kate Casey, and my must-watch list, my guide to every week of what to watch in Unscripted Television can be found at katecasey.substack.com. Make sure that you sign up. You're going to get that in your inbox every Monday. I'm hoping that you have a great weekend, and I cannot wait to circle back with you next week.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.